everyone, and welcome to SPED Homeschool Conversations. We're so glad that you're with us tonight. We are wrapping up a whole month of talking about therapy at home, what you can do to help your student with specific therapy goals, and we've talked about learning from the preschool years to sensory integration, and tonight we're talking about language and literacy. And my special guest tonight is Erica, and I'm going to pronounce your name correctly, Krzyzanowski.
That's right.
And she's with a company called Discovery Speech, Language, and Literacy. And our topic tonight is home strategies for language and literacy. And I want to thank you, Erica, because I know this is an area where a lot of parents have a lot of questions. And I don't even really know how you're going to answer these because I don't know a whole lot about this. So I'm excited to hear what you have to say. So welcome.
Thank you for having me. I'm really excited about it.
Yeah, I'm glad that this worked out for your schedule, and thank you for just sharing from the information that you have as you work with homeschooling families, and just some of the insight that you have to share with parents on these home strategies that they can use. So, so if you're joining us live, looks like we have quite a few viewers, you can put your comments, your questions in the feed. Also know that if you're watching on Facebook, that Erica has a lot of links as well as a couple slides that she shared. So those are available for you right in the Facebook feed. If you're watching on YouTube, then those are in the description. Some of those, the PDFs for the slides are not, but you can definitely pop over to Facebook to find those, or we'll find another way to get those connected to YouTube. But anyways, so as we're getting started, Erica, just tell us a little bit about yourself and tell us a little about, you know, why you do what you do, and so we can get to kind of know you and some of the services and the types of things that you do on a regular basis to help homeschool families with language and literacy.
Sure. So I have been a speech language pathologist for over 12 years, and I started out in early intervention with the little ones, and then I've kind of progressively worked with a lot of other populations. And for the past 5 years, my passion has kind of narrowed into the language and literacy area, and I've really started to specialize in that area. I've become really passionate about how much reading and writing and language skills impact someone for their entire life, and how much it underlies so much of what we do in other areas. And it's been really rewarding to see how much improvement can be made with these kiddos.
Definitely. So, that's really neat, because I think that's an area where we don't spend a lot of time. We know kids have struggles in it, but to have an expert that can come in and help with figuring out what's exactly going on and how to deal with those issues. So as we look at language and literacy, to me, with an unprofessional set of eyes on these words, they seem like the same thing. But how are they different? Mm-hmm. And then again, how are they related to one another?
So language and literacy is just such a complex topic, and it's really easy for people to get a little bit confused about it. Literacy is language, but language doesn't necessarily involve literacy. So we start out our lives learning to use spoken language. So we start with speech sounds, and we use those speech sounds to build on language, and we build words with those speech sounds, and we kind of go up and up and up. And we have grammar, sentence structure, social communication. All of that is language skills. It gets more complex as we get older. But at a certain point, we add in the language skill of literacy. So when I say literacy, I mean anything related to written language. So we take those speech sounds and we translate them into letters and groups of letters all of that stuff. And so that turns into literacy. So we can't have literacy without the language components behind it. And I think it's really easy to forget how dependent on speech sounds and on those other language skills our reading and writing are.
Yes, that, yeah, exactly. And for children that struggle in that area, that can be a profound block in their education. Definitely. So talking about kids who have those blocks and, maybe don't enjoy or are resistant to language and literacy activities such as reading and talking, how can parents respond to that lack of interest without overreacting? I know we all tend to do that a little bit because we take it personally, and we see it as reflection on our teaching. Or we start panicking and we start thinking out to when they're going to be 18 and graduating, and yet they're only five.
Exactly. And you are so right. It's easy, even when I am not the parent and I am just working with my students, I get stressed out if I feel like they're not doing, if they're not cooperating, or if I feel like I'm just feeling pressure, like I really want them to succeed and I don't know how to get them to engage with something. And so over the years, I've really had to work on my own stress level and my own anxiety when I'm feeling pressure to help a child, or if I'm feeling pressure to help a parent even. And I know that as a parent, that's even stronger because, all you want is to help your kid succeed. And so you do feel a pressure about it. And like you said, you take it personally if your kid is appearing to be defiant. So I try to take a step back and really focus on my student is going to pick up on my stress level. They're going to feel that pressure. They're going to feel like they're doing something wrong if they're not able to independently follow through with what I'm asking them to do. And so I have to kind of let some of that go. And so I try to focus on really having, letting go of some of that stress on my end, and then creating a positive environment, and a really encouraging environment. Because one thing that I really try to focus on is if kids can do something, they will. Okay, so no, children are not just sitting there going, I'm just going to fail at this today, and that's going to be fun, right? And if you kind of put yourself in their shoes, it's a really complicated thing that we're asking them to do whenever reading and language is involved. And if they are having a specific struggle with that, or even if they just have an attention issue or an executive functioning issue, they are feeling like they can't do it. And so they start resisting because they don't want to fail. So they've realized if I don't do it, I won't fail. So I try to make it so that it's okay to make a mistake. It's okay to ask for help. And that we all have things that are easier to do and harder to do. I talk to my students all the time about things that I have struggled with academically or even in any area of my life. And just to give them that insight that they're not the only ones that have struggled and that it's going to be okay even if they're struggling. We also want to re reward hard work, right? So kids feel like hard work means that they're doing something wrong. And I think it's really important to point out, you know what? If you work hard at something and you ask for help when you need it, you're going to be able to do things that maybe other people wouldn't be able to do, or that you wouldn't, So focusing on that hard work is a strength and being really encouraging to kids. Letting them make mistakes, letting them ask for help is really important. And I think just trying to remember that if they're not succeeding, they need some kind of help in some area. And that they're not they are not trying to make you mad, even though it can feel that way sometimes.
Yeah, it can feel that way, and it's hard. Like you say, it's stepping back. It's getting that bigger perspective and seeing it really from their point of view, because yeah, it's so easy to internalize just how they're reacting that we can take it so wrong, like you said, that they can just kind of close up and not want to perform just because they know that it's probably not going to have the results. It's going to make you less stressed because it's going to make you more stressed.
So that's one, that's my first strategy, really. And then I always recommend that parents get, I know you're always advocating for this, but, you know, get an expert to help you when you need it. There is, you know, there's nothing better than having someone who's really familiar with something and can kind of come in with their toolbox and give you some ideas and find out why the child is struggling. If we don't know why they're struggling, we are not going to be able to help them. And so I think just remembering that that's a good thing to do and really trying to find experts who want to coach you. Okay, so every parent needs this, but especially when you're homeschooling, you're doing everything, right? So you need that information. You've got to have someone who's not just going to come in, work with your kid, and leave. They want to answer questions. They want to coach you. They want to say, okay, well, that didn't work. What can we do differently? And they want to get that input from you. So definitely find those people. It might be a speech language pathologist who's familiar with language and literacy. Schools have reading specialists. There's also specialists outside of schools that just work on reading. Psychologists are a great resource to help you get to the root of what might be going on with a learning issue or an attention issue. So those are good things to seek out.
Right. And I know we had talked about this before the broadcast, but also a guest that was on earlier this month talked about the same thing too, is that if you work with one of your school districts, assigned therapists, they are not the type of therapist who is going to do what Erica's telling you you need. They don't have the resources or the time or even the thought process that mom or dad need to get involved in this. They're so in that school mindset and on such a tight schedule that they only can work with the student. So yes, that's why private therapy is
just have so much more time to be able to do that. School therapists are often completely overwhelmed with their caseload. They do their best, but, you know, it's often just really hard if they wanted to communicate with every parent on the caseload every week. It's impossible. You know, they wouldn't have the time in the day to do it. So, so I think that's really important. And even if you can't afford long-term therapy, if you can at least find what's wrong, so getting a really good evaluation and even getting five or six sessions with someone to just kind of come in and say, hey, here are some strategies to start with, and maybe coming back every few months, that's so much better than nothing. And you will feel so much more empowered to know how to approach those things.
Yeah, that is a very good point, because I think we think it's like an all or nothing type of thing, and that's great to hear from a therapist that this is an okay thing to do, and and we go through phases too, and you know, kids get sick, and you know, we travel, and as homeschoolers, we tend to just kind of have a little more of a different type of schedule, so being able to work therapy around all those different things, that's very... very good point. And so as far as like, where do you start other than maybe a diagnosis or an initial meeting with a therapist? What do you have any other like starting points that that you really are pretty, I guess, common for kids that struggle in these areas?
Like strategies for kind of how to approach these things. So the strategies that I've put together today are really, they could apply to any family, whether their kids have special needs or not, because so many of these, like we talked about, language and literacy just pervades everything that we do. And so all of these things are just good starting points. The first thing that I like to talk with parents about is just talking with your kids about all of the activities that you're doing. That sounds really simple, and you're probably doing that a lot already. But for kids, especially for children who have a delay or a language disorder or a reading and writing issue, they're going to need a lot more talking to be able to pick up those things. And this starts from when kids are toddlers, you know, all the way up through I'm sure you talk with your your older kids that are in college about various things, and you continue to have those conversations. So this is something that starts early. So anytime you're talking with your child, they're learning that background knowledge about the world. They're learning grammar concepts, sentence structure concepts, vocabulary. They're learning social communication, which, and all of those things are really important to be able to read and comprehend what we're reading, as well as to have that critical thinking skill. So just talking about everything that you do in preschool, a good example might be, you know, you take your little preschooler to the grocery store and you're looking at all the fruits and vegetables and picking them up and talking about them. Oh, look, this apple is red and this one's green and apples are crunchy and we can eat the peel, but yuck, we don't want to eat the peel of a banana. That's gross, you know, and just really talking about everything. And I think it can be really easy to forget that that's how kids are going to learn about these concepts. And it's, you know, you have to make a conscious effort. It's not natural for a lot of parents to talk that much. I'm a natural talker. I talk all the time.
Going through our brain and we're kind of on autopilot.
And you've got other things. And it doesn't have to, it's not 24 hours a day, but if you can kind of pick a few times a day where you're going to focus on just talking, or if you're playing with blocks or something, just talking about, you know, we're building a tower. Oh no, it's going to fall down. And just talking. As kids get older, you know, you could spend some time cooking with them and talking about the ingredients. You can draw in math concepts for that. Talk to using descriptions of how things taste and how things feel and how they change when they get together. And in middle and high school, I try to just figure out what they're interested in and try to bring that in.
Thing to do.
So let's say they're interested in football. That can open the door to thinking about social concepts like teamwork, physics, right? So how things work, strategies of how do we figure out how to work with unpredictable situations. All of those things can be brought into something that interests your child. And, you know, not every kid's going to be interested in the same thing. But another strategy that builds on that one is what I call the broken record strategy. So I tell parents, repeat. And if you feel like a broken record, you are doing it right. And it can feel really annoying. And, you know, especially if it's something new that kids haven't encountered before, they need lots of repetition. So maybe you've already talked about this five times. You might need to talk about it a sixth time for them to get it. And I know that can get frustrating because I think that feeling of, we've talked about this before, why aren't you remembering it? Students with special needs often have trouble with their working memory. And with their attention. And so that means that they're going to have more trouble kind of holding what you're telling them in mind and then remembering it later. They're also going to get overloaded more easily. So repeating things really helps them. It gives them another chance to take that information in and really build on those skills.
That makes sense. Yeah, it can get frustrating. I know you've even had guests on that say, well, just learn these same instructions, you know, like in a different language. Do them in Spanish for a while, and then they're learning two languages, and you don't feel like you're repeating yourself as much. But then, of course, you're adding more language than to their, to their working memory. But it's the same thing with, you know, us doing the laundry and us doing the dishes. You know, we just have to get beyond that this is just something I don't like doing over and over again, to this is something that it just has to be done. You know, and it's productive.
And it makes our lives better. It doesn't feel like, you know, when you're doing your seventh load of laundry, but, you know, we all like to have clean clothes. That's a good analogy. It builds up over time. And you'll see it over time, even if you don't see it right away. And my next strategy is just to do as many hands-on activities and
That's a great
as
one.
many multi-sensory activities as possible. I think sometimes as adults, we forget that the way we learn things is by doing them, right?
Yes.
I even, you know, when I got out of graduate school, as soon as I started actually treating students, I learned so much faster than just sitting in a classroom, you know, or watching someone else do it. So if you kind of think about how much that makes a difference for your learning experience, it's more enjoyable, but it's also just going to create a better memory for that concept. So I try to bring in, at the very least, some type of visual that can really help with students who have working memory issues. If you think about how much work our brain has to do when we're working on something we struggle with, I think about this because I had to spend many years with math tutoring. That was something that was really hard for my brain. And I got it, but I needed lots of help with it. And if I couldn't have a visual, I would be lost because I just couldn't hold those concepts in my mind. And so having something written or a picture can really help our brains to grasp a concept. Then we also can bring in hearing something, right? So talked about talking with your kids. So listening is practice. Okay. So we tend not to think it is. We want kids to answer lots of questions out loud, but just having them listen and being engaged is going to help their brains to practice. So if we have them listening, if we have them with a visual, if we have them talking about it, if we have them touching something or moving something, that can really help them get engaged. If they don't like to write, so if they have dysgraphia or they're just, you know, they're working on their fine motor skills and they're just struggling, I have them move something. So like when I'm having kids spell, instead of having them write the letters, I might have letter tiles and they can move those around. That's going to get them a lot more engaged than if they're just watching me move them around, right? So having them draw or write, I have kids that hate writing and spelling, but they love to draw. And so, you know, if you can get something involving that, that can really help. Anytime you have a science experiment, do something hands-on, do something that they can see. And that will just really draw them in and help them create that memory and have fun with it. You know, having fun with it helps everybody. So,
Yeah, we found that, you know, just those visuals, if you just, you know, leave them up in your homeschool room, every time your child walks through that space, they connect again with that same image, and they continue learning, even if you're not there. And just the convenience of having that right in your home as you homeschool, and we forget that that's, you know, an added bonus, that at school they would just leave those things at school.
Exactly.
Or they'd be in a folder somewhere. You just stick them on the wall. Because my kids even came back to me, oh yeah, I remember, because I always looked at that. It's like, oh, okay, that was effective.
Yeah, that's a really good point, that leaving them up where kids can see them all the time, especially for those really basic things that you're trying to get into their minds. That's that kind of repetition of that concept. And then, you know, I constantly look things up on the internet just to get a picture of something to show a student that they say, what is that? And I show them a picture and they're like, oh, I know what that is. I've seen that before, but they didn't know the word for it. And so really making those connections. The next strategy that I think a lot of parents already do this, but I like to remind parents, go to the library. That, you know, even if you know, you already have a ton of books at your home, I think it's a really great experience for kids to go into this magical place where there's just millions of books and they can pick out whatever they want. And there's no, you know, you don't have to pay for it. So if they take it home and they don't like it, you haven't lost anything. So there's no stress about like, no, we can't, you know, we can't afford this book or that book, because books really are expensive and they add up. And that lack of risk, I think, is really fun for kids to go pick out whatever they want to read, take home 20 books, look through them, figure out which ones they like, which ones they don't like, and then they're going to be so much more excited to read if they have picked that book out themselves. Now, you you can pick out books for your kids. I don't, you know, I'm not saying they should only read what they love to read, because especially for my students who may not love to read, they might pick something that's not really challenging enough for them to maybe learn some new concepts. So we kind of have those two separate aspects of reading, reading for pleasure, letting them read whatever they want, versus you're kind of guiding their reading and giving them some scaffolding to be able to learn some new concepts through reading.
Yeah. Can you elaborate on what scaffolding is, just in case our parents don't know?
I always forget that. Sometimes I forget which words are profession specific. Scaffolding is just giving students enough support that they can meet whatever you're asking them to do. And we always think of this zone of, this is too hard, right? This is too easy. We want to kind of keep them here where it's enough to be challenging, but it's not going to overwhelm them. And our job is to scaffold them, hold them up, give them enough strategies so that they can stay in that zone, feel successful. So that's what I mean by scaffolding.
Great. Thank you for describing that. Yes. And a good librarian can be your best friend.
Yes.
I know, we moved to a small town and we had this librarian that would just go, she wanted to find books for our kids that they liked. She wanted to know their interests, and she would even look them up in the Interloan Library of what was available. And
And they love that. Like, that's they get really excited when someone wants help with something.
Yeah.
And if you don't know what kids at certain ages are reading, the librarians are always in tune with that.
Yes.
And if you say, "Oh, my kid loves trucks," they're going to point you to a bunch of books at their age level that have trucks in them. So that makes your job a lot easier.
Yeah, definitely. I love that. It just, that library is a magical place. I'm glad that you mentioned that, because yes, the vocabulary that some, you know, children's books even have that you can just introduce into your kids' lives. It's wonderful. And then just get them, take them on adventures. So,
And so that's a really, go ahead.
Oh no, I want you to finish up.
Oh, I was going to say that kind of leads into my next strategy, but I know you were going to have
a quick break and then come back, and Erica's going to finish up her strategies with us, and they've all been great so far. I can't wait to hear the rest of them, and we're going to hear from our sponsor and then bring her back. So I'll let you get a drink of water and move it around if you'd like. And I just wanted to thank Kathy Cool from Learn Differently for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. If you don't know, Kathy is on the board of Sped Homeschool and greatly appreciate all that she does. I'm going to just tell you a little bit about her if you don't know her, but her website, learndifferently.com, is listed down in that feed as it's going across. If you're listening on the podcast, of course, it is learndifferently.com. At learndifferently.com, Kathy Cool helps parents teaching children and teens with learning challenges. She provides resources, tips, and encouragement. Whether your child or children struggle with reading, writing, math, or focus, Kathy offers creative solutions to help you teach more effectively. For years, Kathy helped her dyslexic, distractible son after school. Then she began homeschooling him in fourth grade. Homeschooling led her customized education to his interests and strengths, and while addressing his weaknesses. The results made his neuropsychologist declare that homeschooling was the best thing for him. Don't we love that? Other parents began seeking Kathy's advice, and she began speaking at conferences. After her son's graduation from homeschool, Kathy interviewed 64 parents who also homeschooled students with diagnosed learning disabilities and other challenges. From those interviews, her experience and study, Kathy wrote Homeschooling Your Struggling Learner. This handbook helps parents or anyone helping children or teens with learning challenges, including attention issues, dyslexia, and other learning disabilities, autism, and giftedness. It's available on her website or on Amazon.com. Again, that's Homeschooling Your Struggling Learner. Kathy also wrote two short books available on Amazon and her website, Staying Sane as You Homeschool, that's an important one, and Encouraging Your Child, as well as articles for many homeschooling magazines. And she also blogs at LearnDifferently.com as well as on SpedHomeschool.com. Kathy speaks at homeschool and education conferences internationally. She also advises families individually, providing advice, encouragement, and insight. You can sign up for a free introductory session on her website with no obligation. Just look for the blue chat bubble in the lower right-hand corner at LearnDifferently.com. So thank you, Kathy, for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. We appreciate all that you do for our organization and for your partnership. And I'm going to bring Erica back, and we're going to continue talking about strategies for language and literacy for your students. And if you didn't catch at the very beginning, Erica talked about the differences between language and literacy, the similarities, and how they all they work together. But we're talking about students that really struggle in mm-hmm. these areas, and what parents can do, home strategies that we can do with these students who are kind of resistant mm-hmm. to us speaking and them speaking back to us and then reading and all those things that are included in that whole sphere. Mm-hmm. So let's quick recap what you talked about the before we took the break on your strategies. It was, let me see if I can do this from memory. I don't think I can.
Well, the first thing was just to create a positive, encouraging environment.
Yep.
Then to get expert help when you need it. Mm-hmm. To talk about your daily activities with your kids. To be a broken record and repeat things
right.
all yes. the time. To use hands-on and multi-sensory activities whenever you can. And then I think we had finished with to go to the library and take advantage of that as a resource.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And if you're watching on Facebook, you can find that whole list on a JPEG image that you can copy right off of that feed. So, and also if you're watching live, if you have questions, if you have a student that struggles in this area and you want to ask Erica about that, definitely share those with us. We'd love to build those into this conversation. So, but until we get any comments or questions, let's continue with your list.
Okay. So the next one is just to read together daily. Like you were saying before our break, books have so much vocabulary in them. And research has shown that books have a huge variety of vocabulary in them that we would never use in our everyday speech. So it's one of the best ways to add both those spoken language concepts and to, you know, get your reading and written language in at the same time. So you've got your vocabulary concepts, grammar, you know, that sentence structure, playing with kind of, you know, humor and how language kind of builds on humor, social concepts, which are often based in language, right? So we all know that we can put our foot in our mouth and, you know, if we say just slightly the wrong thing, it can make a huge difference to someone who might take offense to a certain way of phrasing something. And then you can also bring in concepts in a really interesting way that are part of stories that might not be as interesting outside of a book. One thing that I try to remind parents of, you know, we talked about listening is practice too, right? And so we want to remember that when, even when kids are able to read silently on their own or out loud on their own, it can be really important to continue to read out loud to them. And I think a lot of teachers, school teachers often kind of forget to encourage that, I think, because they're so focused on those reading and writing skills for the kids, you know, which is also very important. Mm-hmm. But you're losing out on a lot of things when you're not reading out loud with your kids. you're modeling the phrasing that we should use when we're reading.
Yes.
You're modeling different emotions and different voices. You can stop and talk with them about it, you know, as you go. And you're also giving them that social, enjoyable experience of reading where they're not having to work so hard, right? Because my kiddos who have dyslexia or who have reading comprehension issues, they've learned over time that reading is hard, right? And this kind of goes back to creating this environment where we can bring some enjoyment in. If I can sit and read with them and take some of that cognitive pressure off of them, they're not having to focus on sounding out all the letters and making sure that they remember what they just read because they worked so hard just to read it.
Right, exactly.
It's just so much more fun, and they can feel that enjoyment of books without the stress. And so I think it's one of the best things that you can do for kids.
And well, a lot of curriculums, I mean, when I started homeschooling 19 years ago, read out louds were like, that's just the norm for a homeschool family. I think as we're moving more towards digital homeschool methods, those are getting pushed out from a lot of the newer types of curriculums. But those were some of the most enjoyable times I've had with my children. And the key I found was to do it during lunch.
Because that's a good idea.
While my kids are eating, they were a captive audience. You know, I ate after we had lunch, or they ate lunch. But it was a time when I could keep them in one spot and they would listen, because they weren't all into listening to mom read. But over time, you know, that it became a habit, then they did enjoy it. But if you're just getting started with this new concept, that that's something that helps.
That's a really good suggestion, actually. I'm going to put that in my toolbox of suggestions for parents when I'm talking to them. I really like that. Yeah, and it also, it can give you that enjoyable experience, like you were saying, where you start to enjoy reading with your kids again, where you may have become just, it's just so stressful for everybody that everyone's avoiding it, right? Not just the
exactly.
kids.
Exactly,
So my next strategy is just asking questions while you're reading. And my caveat on that is, we're not quizzing kids. We're not trying to just, you know, pepper them with questions that they have to answer correctly. The point of the asking questions while reading is to get them thinking about what they're reading, and to also model, this is this type of question and this gets this type of answer. So a lot of my kiddos really struggle with this. If they've got a language issue, trying to answer a variety of questions can be really tricky. You know, from the younger kids who, you know, you might be modeling, what is that? What did he say? Where is he? You know, those kind of lower level questions to, you know, how, why, what do you think is going to happen next? All of those questions can be tricky. And if you think about every subject that you're teaching your child involves all these types of questions, right? All the way, I mean, college students are answering why and how questions. You know, we have to do that in our jobs. But if a student, if you're asking them questions and they just give you that blank stare, and you're not sure, how do I, am I supposed to just not ask them questions? Is that, you know, is it too hard? I'm not sure.
That's a good question. Right. Exactly. Yeah. So, what do we do with that?
So one of the best ways to handle that is just to answer the question for them, but in a really conversational way that doesn't make them feel like they're wrong. So for a little kid, you know, you could be reading about a dog that's running around a farm, and you could say, where is the dog? And then your child looks up at you like, I don't know. I don't understand what you're saying to me. I'm confused. Or they just don't have the words to say it. They might understand what you mean, but they can't express it. So I might say, oh, I wonder where he is. Oh, look, he's behind the barn. And then I would point to it. And so it's kind of keeping that conversation going where you're modeling what you're looking for with those kids. Give it, you know, give them a chance to respond first. But I find this to be really successful. And with older kids, continuing to talk with them about, I don't expect you to have all the answers. I just really like talking about this and I want to know what you think. And giving them a chance to make smart guesses and not always be right is
I love
really
that.
good. You can say, oh, that's an interesting thought, or that's a really good guess. Let's see if we can figure it out together. And so they're not feeling just pressured to answer everything correctly all the time. And I think that with creating that positive environment, modeling for students when you don't know the answer to something. So let's say with an older student, you're working on science and you've kind of hit a wall and you're thinking, okay, I was fine up until now. I'm not quite sure what this concept is or how to teach it. Let's look it up. Let's go read about it together. And really just modeling that, you're asking questions too, and you're also learning at the same time.
Yeah, that's a very good point. Yeah, we do that a lot in college algebra with my daughter right now.
Yeah.
It's like, this has been a while since I've done this.
Yeah, exactly. Or they've changed it completely.
Yeah,
Probably, you
exactly. I
know.
don't remember this at all.
Yeah. With reading, as kids get older, especially as they're third, fourth grade and up, we're really expecting them to make a lot of inferences. So we don't tell them everything. That would be really boring. It's like if you went to a movie and there was no mystery or suspense about what was going to happen. So we start doing that more and more. And for inferences, and kind of, using context clues, critical thinking, putting information together, reading can be great. Talking about things, watching movies, and kind of talking about what could happen next or why was that exciting and suspenseful. And I like to start pretty young talking to kids about, you're going to learn how to be a detective. Okay, so a good detective looks for clues everywhere, right? And you're always paying attention, you're watching things, you're listening to things, you're trying to put information together, and you might not always guess right, but you can make a really good guess, like we were talking about before. And even think about all of us adults that love mysteries, right? So, and true crime and even all of that stuff, right? So we like to figure things out. We like to think about things. Young kids, I mean, even second, third grade can really start to kind of get this concept. And so I have, these like little mini mysteries. There's some books that you can get on Amazon called Mini Mysteries that are just made for teachers. Those are really fun. They're very short. So for third grade and up, that's good. But really, any mystery series that you find that your kids are interested in. I grew up reading Encyclopedia Brown,
Oh, yes.
so any of those, right? So can be really great, fun books to read with kids to help them work on this inferencing idea. And that will carry over into, all of their other subjects, that kind of thinking skill. And you've probably read some of those books with with your kiddos as well.
Definitely. Well, it seems like every story, I mean, a good story is written where you don't get all those things filled in. And then, you do hit those points and you ask your kids, what's going to happen next? What do you think they're going to do? Or what would you do? And, and it helps you relate more to the characters and what's going on. And, we did a lot of historical fiction types of books. And so that helped to teach history as well as doing literature. Just
Yeah,
gotta
that's
two in
another good
one.
example. Yeah, and you're right. Good stories always have a little bit of mystery and suspense.
Well, that's how real
So
life is. I mean, we just don't know how
exactly.
it's gonna work out. I mean, right now, whatever's going on in your life, you just don't know. And it's I guess if you're looking at somebody else's life, it's better than
Here.
Go, oh, good darn it. I don't know what's
Yeah.
going to happen with mine.
And I even think about, you know, social inferencing. I talk to my students about, you know, if you saw your brother sneaking out of the kitchen with kind of a shifty look on his face and he's holding his hands behind his back, you might guess that he just stole some cookies and that he's trying to sneak off with them. So we're always kind of making those guesses. And those can be some, you know, kind of fun examples there.
Yeah.
My next strategy is just word games. So I love word games. It's another way to build that environment of we're all enjoying these language concepts. We're having fun. There's no pressure. Learning to play with words and learning to use words in kind of a fun way is just enjoyable for everybody. One game that I really like to introduce to my students, and a lot of times families like to play this as well, and I might print out a bunch of, you know, vocabulary pictures for them to use for this, for that visual support. I just call it What Am I? I think a lot of teachers and parents have played this a lot, where you're just describing, you're describing an object, any kind of noun. An animal is great for younger kids. So if I'm if I'm a cow, I might say, you know, I'm an animal. I live on a farm. I give people milk, and I say moo, right? And so that's just a really great definition of a cow, but it's a game, and you're trying to get someone else to guess. And kids love this because it's that, like, oh, can they guess
that.
It, you know? And I'll have them, you know, I have them practice with me, and then we go and we see if someone else can guess it. And they just think it's the coolest thing. And you can make it really simple for younger kids. As kids get older, you can change the words that you use. So instead of saying I'm an animal and I live on a farm, you could say I'm a mammal that produces milk for people to drink. You know, and you can change it. I find, you know, even up through older elementary school kids like this, you know, if you're kind of just giving them that new vocabulary, you can do this. You could take your science vocabulary, your English vocabulary, and you could play this game with kids, and they're defining words, but they don't know that they're defining words, right?
Exactly. It's such a backdoor thing.
Exactly. Yeah. And it's a good, it's fun to guess. And then when you give them clues, they're working on their listening comprehension, and they're also kind of making those inferences. I try to encourage families to use categories, functions, and attributes. So start with what group is this object in? What do they do? And then describe, you know, do they have a certain color? Does it smell a certain way? Does it sound a certain way? All of those things. Yeah, so those are good aspects of that. And then there's lots of word games that are, that you can buy at Target or, you know, order online. For that, a similar game that's got pictures, it's called Headbands, and the kids wear a little headband around their head, and then they put a picture that's facing out.
I've seen that.
The other person is describing what's on their forehead to them, and they're trying to guess what's on their forehead. And kids love it. it's also Heads Up, I think, is an electronic version of basically that game. Then you got like Taboo, Password, all of those games that, you know, older kids might really enjoy that are all word games, and you're making it fun. So, and then like spelling games, there's books called Word Ladders, where you have certain letters, and it gives you a clue about what the word means and which letter you might have to change to get that next word. And that's a good way to, like, in my therapy sessions, I say, okay, if you work really hard, we'll get to play that word ladder game. And they think it's just, you know, the coolest thing. And I'm just still working on spelling and language. So,
exactly. Yeah. I do the same thing with the young man I tutor in math. We do visual memory things. But he thinks it's the greatest because he beat me. So I beat him this morning. but yeah, to turn anything into, add that fun element. And it makes them think that they're not learning anymore. So yes.
Exactly. And then with that, it's not exactly a game, but joke books or finding or just looking up jokes online, puns are based on, if you change a word just a little bit, it's funny. And so jokes are so dependent on language concepts, and kids love to play with words in that way, and that's another way to make it really fun.
Well, and they get used to, especially with jokes, is the timing. So they have to get the timing right for the joke to be right. What I did, I shared this on another broadcast, but my son had a lot of language issues when he was young, my middle one. And so I actually read 101 elephant jokes onto an audio tape for him and did all the timing exactly the way it should be. And he would listen to that over and over again as he would fall asleep at night. And then when he went out in public, he actually told the jokes with the correct timing.
Cool.
And so it got him to practice that language, but it also got him, and repeating, and I didn't have to keep doing it over and over again. So there's one.
That's a really great example. I like that you recorded yourself doing it. And like you said, it took off that kind of that broken record thing where you're not having to do it all the time.
Do it all the time.
Older kids, I forgot to mention this when we were talking about reading aloud to your kids. If your middle schooler or high schooler just is not going to accept that, which is understandable, they're kind of past that point, audiobooks are a perfect way to replace that. And
I
have had so many students who hate reading but love to do audiobooks. And that's still going to help with their reading skills, even if they're listening, because it's the language skills, but it's also going to be in that same format of what they would be reading. And we really process it in the same way as far as our thinking processes. Mm-hmm. So it's not less than, it's a beautiful way for kids to learn, and they can be really independent with it. I like to have students look at the page at least part of the time while they're listening to audiobooks, because that really helps them make that connection between what something sounds like and what it's written as. But
But it does help with teens. It's like when we were traveling, we listened to Wuthering Heights. That's not a book I really want to read, So I don't spend that much time, but as we could enjoy it together as a family while we were traveling. And we took a 2-week trip, and we finished it in that amount of time, and all enjoyed the book together. But it's one of those things that, when you have good voice actors, that they can get that those points where when you're reading the text, especially for a struggling reader, to try to get all of that understanding of what's going on and the different characters, it makes it a lot easier to decipher.
Yeah.
For sure.
That's a good point. I like the idea of listening in the car, when you're all bored on a long road trip. And instead of, maybe watching movies or whatever, it's kind of a nice way for everyone to be able to enjoy it at once.
We usually travel enough that my daughter gets all of her literature in for the year.
That's awesome.
In our travels, because we go for like 2-week trips and travel multi-states, and awesome. So we have about 7 minutes left. I know you had the, is that, was that the end of the list there?
That's
what you were going to talk to? Mm-hmm. And then I know you also had another graphic that you had for me to share. Do you want me to bring that up and talk about
that?
Yeah, that
would be great. That's the Scarborough's reading rope. And I think you've shown it before with other...
We had another guest or guests. Two that have shared that, yes. Mm-hmm.
And it's a very famous demonstration of just the complexity of what goes into reading. So if you look on the right side there, skilled reading. So that's, if you're listening to someone reading out loud and it's just flowing really smoothly, they're able to pronounce everything that they see, and they're able to comprehend everything after they've read it. That's on the right. But if you look on the left at all of those things that go into it. We mentioned several of these things earlier on,
right?
Kind of looking at that language versus literacy. So the top group of strands is really that oral language, the spoken language.
Mm-hmm.
So that background knowledge, the vocabulary, the sentence structures, the word order, being able to think through things with the inferences like we were talking about, and just kind of understanding that we've got a fiction book, we've got a nonfiction book, we've got metaphors and things like that that we can use, you know, all of those concepts. So we start to build those up through all of our learning and all of our listening, and they start to get more automatic and richer and richer. And then at the bottom, that word recognition, that's just linking the letters to the speech sounds and being able to do that fluently.
Hmm.
So that takes a few skills. That phonological awareness there, that first one under word recognition,
right?
That can be very mysterious to people, and most people never really understand what this is or aware of it. But one of the best examples of that is just like rhyming. You know how little kids have all these books like Dr. Seuss that all the words rhyme, hop on pop, and it's deliberate. So kids need to learn there are patterns in words, there are sequences to words, there are ways that we can break words up into pieces like syllables and things like that. It gets more sophisticated as we go. But if that piece is missing, we're really not going to be able to learn to read fluently. And so even if you have a child that's not even trying to read at school yet, if they're struggling to understand concepts like rhyming and syllables, and they're just not able to distinguish between sounds that sound a lot alike, that's a warning sign that they need to get more intervention and prevent a reading problem.
That's a great point.
It often shows up there. And so once we get all of those really in-depth concepts, you know, getting more and more automatic, going across there, learning to have strategies if we get stuck, that all builds into that fluent reading. And that's another reason that I think we need to really respect what our students are trying to do. It's really complicated. And if even one of those strands is missing, they're going to have a lot more trouble. And so if we can really appreciate that, that can really help us to understand when they do get resistant or understand when they're struggling. They're not trying to cause trouble or anything like that, like we talked about before. So.
Or lazy, or there's a lot of things we tend to turn to first.
Exactly.
But it like you said, it's a very complex process, and as a parent, to understand that and to be compassionate towards our kids who do struggle.
And towards yourself, right? I mean, this is complicated. You may not be able to learn about all of this all at once. And that's where getting that expert to kind of come in and talk to you about what structured literacy is and all of that. And I had sent you a couple of links that has more information on how to treat reading disorders and just kind of how to understand some of that if you do want more in-depth knowledge. And, you know, finding someone who understands both language and reading and writing can be really helpful to you in understanding all of that.
Yeah, definitely. And looks like I have the I there wrong. I typed that in. But yes, if you want to find those links that Erica shared, if you're watching on Facebook, they're in the feed of this video, and if you're watching on YouTube, they are in the description, so you can find those links there. But you can also find a link to her website, which is Discovery Speech Language and Literacy. The URL is just discoveryss.com. And can you tell us a little bit about what people can find on your website?
Yeah, so I've got some brief descriptions of speech and language and literacy, kind of describing what they are and what you might be evaluated for. And then there are resource pages for each of those things. So I've got lists of websites that would, give you a lot more information if you're looking to educate yourself. Some of the links are great for parents, and some of them are great for professionals. And I also have a few podcasts there if you learn
Awesome.
better that way. And please feel free, if you don't find something that you're looking for, feel free to email me. My contact information is on the website, and I'd be happy
Okay.
to direct people to other resources as well.
Great. And you also do teletherapy. So, and they can find those resources on your website as well, I'm assuming. Awesome. Well, thank you, Erica. This has been so informative. I've learned so much, and you had some really great, super easy to do strategies that I think parents can really grasp and say, yes, this is something I can do. This is something I can incorporate in our day that isn't too difficult or too overwhelming. And it's just, it's those everyday things. We just need to be more intentional, I think, is, just kind of a summary of what you're talking about, using that language and making sure that our kids are getting what the input that they need, and we're drawing out the input from them. So,
Exactly. Yeah, and I appreciate you adding some strategies in there too. That'll help me. And I really appreciate you having me. And like I said, I'd be happy to answer questions if people think of something afterwards and want to contact me. I'm available, so.
awesome. Well, thank you so
All right.
much. And this wraps up our month of therapy at home strategies. Although next week we're kind of gonna do a just kind of a filler week, because it's election day next Tuesday, and so I'm not doing an evening show. I just know I'm gonna be competing against way too much news. But we're gonna do a matinee next week. So, I'm going to be talking with Dr. Stephen Green about teaching time management to students. And so that kind of falls under a little bit of that therapy category. But that's what we're going to do at noon Central Time next week. So, if you want to join us for that, if that works out better for you than one of our evening broadcasts, definitely join us for that. And so that's next week. But I also want to thank Kathy Cooligan for sponsoring this episode of Sped Homeschool Conversations. You can find her information at learndifferently.com. So thank you, Kathy, for your sponsorship and for your partnership, as well as Erica. Erica is also a partner with Sped Homeschool, and you'll find her information on our website as well. So thanks all for joining us. Thank you for all the hearts. Although we didn't get any comments, there were a lot of people watching, so we appreciate that. And thanks for watching Sped Homeschool Conversations. We'll see you again next week as we just continue to empower parents to teach special education at home. So have a great night, everybody. Thanks for joining us.
Thank
Thanks again,
you.
Erica. Okay. Bye.
Bye.